Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Elevated Places with Dr. Ava Muhammad. Dr. Ava is a gifted attorney, researcher, lecturer, and author of 5 books. She received her Juris Doctorate from Georgetown University in Washington, D.C., and is a member of the New York Bar Association. Dr. Ava has been featured in Essence magazine many times and was named by Essence as one of America's most powerful black women. Join Dr. Ava every Thursday evening here on Blog Talk Radio, where you will hear a message that will provide you with the tools needed to repair and uplift the spirit, moral character, and living condition of the black woman. Our call-in number is 347-324-5091. Or visit us on our radio show page at blogtalkradio.com/elevatedplaces. And now, here is your host, Dr. Ava Muhammad.
Welcome to Elevated Places. This is your host, Ava Muhammad. Greetings to all of you in the Arabic language, Assalamu Alaikum, which means peace be unto you. Today is January the 3rd, 2013, and it is such a blessing to be alive. I am so honored to be joined by those of you who have chosen to call in and chosen to log in to Elevated Places. We are, of course, live on Blog Talk Radio at www.blogtalkradio.com/elevatedplaces. blogtalkradio.com/elevatedplaces. You can also take part in the discussion by calling us at area code 347-324-5091. That's 347-324-5091. And we do have a lot to talk about. Later in the show, shortly, Allah willing, we're going to be joined by Dr. Jahi Issa, who is a professor, lecturer, writer, and activist. And he has a lot to discuss with us. He has published a very thought-provoking article, along with some other actions that he has taken, The Ethnic Cleansing of Historically Black Colleges and Universities in the Age of Obama. And Allah willing, we'll be joined by him shortly. But of course, Elevated Places would not be the great success that it is without the presence of our brilliant and affable co-host, Brother Terrence Muhammad. Assalamu alaikum, Brother Terrence. Glad to have you with us.
Walaikum salam, man. Walaikum salam, and happy new year in the dead of winter.
Yes, sir. Well, here in Chicago, it is starting to feel like Chicago.
I believe.
Yes, sir. But I must say I'm grateful for the fact that it is dry. We have been dodging some bullets. We haven't had any blizzards. We've had little sprinkling here and there of snow, but it has stayed thus far pretty dry.
That's a good thing.
Yes, sir. And so, Brother Terrence, what would you like to share with us before we have Dr. Jahi Issa join us?
Well, you know, there's a whole lot in the news. There's a whole lot of news going on, and you know, I think today started the 113th getting everybody in back into Congress. The next 100 days, we know, will be very significant, and things have already kicked off and already started. Just this whole discussion of the fiscal cliff. Just everything that's going on, what 2013 will bring in this, as I said, new year. And I think as we look at the government, I think not only look at the government because that's what's on the news, but what would it bring to our communities and what are the resolutions that people have that will be changed in this year as it relates to, one, we're looking at Chicago with the 500 homicides that was in Chicago and looking at what are the strategies and plans for our communities this year to decrease that as we're looking at the government trying to deal with this economy and just reminding everybody that on Savings Day, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan will be talking about the economic blueprint of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad at Savior's Day, February 24th, because that's where we, as we know, need to go is entrepreneurship and doing for self in this coming year. So I know whatever's going on in the news, we, again, as black people, need to come together in unity and do something. Because as we are watching all of the things that are going on in the news, it's not necessarily getting better. As I just talked to a friend of mine who was at a funeral today because another young man got shot, and we're starting to hear a lot more of that going on. So that's really about it for right now. Like I said, Savior Day is coming up in February, and we want to be stay tuned to that. And all of the interesting things that are, like I said, in the news as far as what's going on the Capitol as we get prepared for the inauguration. And, of course, the movie is still the hot topic, Django. The crowd is still loving this wonderful story of Django that has so many different layers of discussion that people can pull out to sit down with your white friends and black friends to have a real deep discussion.
Well, we're going to definitely talk about it later on in the program. I was blessed, of course, to deliver the keynote lecture this past Sunday at Mas Mariam.
Right.
One of the things that I spoke about, well, the title was One Man, but it was actually a narrative of the great exodus of 6 million black people from the South to the North and to the West over a period expanding from 1915 through 1970 as we literally fled from the horrors of Jim Crow. And, of course, the movie and what it portrays, as you said, it has layers. And so we will definitely talk about that. And also we can share and direct the listeners to the NOI.org and thefinalcall.com because they can also watch an interview that Minister Farrakhan gave with Dr. Boyce Watkins a few days ago. And they had a very profound discussion of the film, but it's definitely the talk of the community right
yes.
now. Yes. But in the interim, let me say quickly before I bring on Dr. Issa, we also are blessed to be joined by our Elevated Places contributor, our agricultural economist, Dr. Rizzi Muhammad. Dr. Rizzi, we're so happy that you are with us again. Assalamu alaikum to you.
Wa alaikum salam to you and to the brother Terrence. Thank you so much.
All right. Well, brothers, we're going to get into the heart of the program, and we have been blessed to be joined by a very profound black man this Thursday evening, Dr. Jahi Issa. He is formerly, and we'll learn shortly why it's formerly, an assistant professor of history and Africana studies at Delaware State University. And for those that may not know, Delaware State is a historically black college, which we call HBCUs. I'm a product of one. Central State University was my undergraduate school, and I think the two of you are as well, which we'll get into. Dr. Issa published an article entitled The Ethnic Cleansing of Historically Black Colleges and Universities in the Age of Obama. And that article focused on revealing the systematic process by which the U.S. Department of Education and other privatized conservative business interests are, and listen to this good, they're removing African-American teachers along with billions of dollars of federal funds that are intended for HBCUs in a collective effort to decrease enrollment of African-American students and to subvert and ultimately remove HBCUs altogether. Dr. Issa received his PhD in history from Howard University with a focus on the African diaspora, and he is the loving father of five children. We have a lot more to say about him, but we want him to be with us when we start talking deeper. Dr. Issa, welcome to Elevated Places. We really are grateful to have you here.
Yes, thank you, Sister Muhammad. I'm really blessed to be here. I do want to say that I came up in the Nation of Islam. My auntie out of St. Louis, Missouri, that's where I was born and raised. My aunt has been in the Nation for more than 30 years. Her name is Lucille Muhammad. I grew up with minister. That's my aunt, my mother's baby sister. And I grew up with Minister Akbar Muhammad's children. And, you know, I've traveled to Ghana with Minister Akbar Muhammad, and my wife is from Ghana also. And so it's a blessing to be on with someone of your caliber, and I'm excited to be here and to talk about what's going on and spread this information. I think it's very important information. And but I do want to say this right before we start. A lot of people don't know what Dashango. Dashango is the American South Africanized version of Shango.
Mm.
And if you're familiar with Shango, Shango is a Yoruba war deity. And what Shango does is kill. When he goes to war with you, if you send that spirit out to somebody to revenge something that someone has done, he kills everything, and he doesn't discriminate. And
yes,
so I think on that part, very few people are understanding that aspect of the movie, that who Shango is.
Yeah.
Right before Minister Farrakhan said what he had to say, I was on the phone days before his interview with a friend telling him how I really believe that that movie was a preparation for war, race wars.
Yeah.
I really believe that. So, yes, I just wanted to say that. And you have a whole other dedicated to that, but I wanted to throw that off.
But that's good. It's good teaching. And the beauty of this forum is brilliant minds like yours, the listeners who really – they don't just listen, they drive the program by calling in. But this type of information just isn't available through mainstream conduits. And the more of us who are thinkers that can come together and be able to hear from people such as yourself and to get introduced to that kind of in-depth knowledge, that's invaluable. It's actually priceless. You know,
yes.
So we really appreciate hearing that and anything else that you have to add. But I do want to get into your situation because you're an activist yourself. You're not only an intellectual, but you're an activist. And you created quite a stir because of your willingness and your courage in speaking the truth. And Minister Farrakhan has also addressed to some degree this issue of the really insidious manner in which black colleges and universities are being taken apart and destroyed because there's just such resistance in white America to us having any sense or knowledge of self. And so it's my understanding that you were discharged from your position earlier this year at Delaware State. And I wanted you to discuss that and also discuss what we can do through Elevated Places to assist you.
Yes, I was discharged back in September of 2011. I wrote an article called How Black Colleges Are Turning White: The Ethnic Cleansing of HBCUs in the Age of Obama. And I wrote it in an effort to really, I wrote it for black folk, so that they could see, as you said, the insidious way in which the elite in this country are in the process of dismantling African Americans in higher education, especially the backbone of what created the black middle class, which is historically black colleges and universities. And so I began this research. I actually started the research several years prior at a university that I was teaching at called Elizabeth City State University. And then when I got to Delaware State, I saw the same thing. I was constantly told that the school was going to turn white and that they didn't need many black professors and they didn't want black professors really teaching anything that was about black people. And I didn't understand it because I was a product of all black colleges. You know, from Texas Southern in Houston with my bachelor's, Southern University with my master's, and Howard, my PhD. And so I just wanted to see how is it possible that a black college can turn white? So while I was at Delaware State, the white faculty, they were so arrogant in their dismissal of all the black professors at Delaware State. African Americans, meaning African black folk who were born in the United States, represent less than 20% of the faculty at Delaware State, and almost half of them are at retirement age. And so what we're seeing is a cleansing. And one of the faculty told me my first semester at Delaware State that Delaware State was going to be, this was an administrator actually, he said that Delaware State was going to be like Bluefield State and West Virginia State. And I was like, what is that? I know about black colleges. I've never heard of those schools, you know. And I looked up and I saw that those are historically black colleges, but they have no black people there. And they receive millions of dollars in federal funding for being historically black colleges, but they have less than 10% black population and student body, and far less than that in faculty. And so I wanted to see if this was a general pattern. So I began to research the Department of Education and the history of historically black colleges, the history of the White House advisor on HBCUs that's appointed by every president since Reagan. And I wanted to see what was going on. And I even went to D.C. and interviewed the White House advisor on HBCUs. And so what I began to see is that it was a deliberate pattern that was being pushed by big money and big government officials to basically strip or cleanse black people out of these schools. I think at this point they've realized that it was the black colleges that created Ida B. Wells. It was the black colleges that created Du Bois and Martin Luther King. It was the black colleges that created me and you and Dr. Muhammad, who's on there with you, and a lot of our people. And because of that activism that you only can get from a black faculty majority that's going to teach you to do the right thing and how to struggle for your people, I think the government realized that they had to curtail that if they were going to move into this new era of what I call control over the populace 20, 30 years down the line. They had to curtail the black colleges and what is being taught. And the only way they can curtail it is first remove all the professors out, right? And then once you do that, it's not a black college, black students won't come. Because students are coming college for culture and tradition. And so I realized that this, especially when I didn't really understand the extent until I was actually fired, beat up, and arrested at Delaware State University, and now I'm facing more than 2 years in jail for charges that even the police who arrested me recently in court said that they had no probable cause to arrest me, but the judge refused to drop the charges, and I still have this noose hanging around my head.
You know, I just hope we're paying careful attention to this, because if we understand what we're listening to, that a black man with a doctorate degree, a professor at a university, being arrested, we're talking about being faced with criminal charges for exercising your First Amendment rights. And so it proves again and again, and as you mentioned, in the age of Obama, see this so-called post-racial era that is just absolutely non-existent, and it's not even a possibility. There is no such thing as post-racial in a society that's built on race, white supremacy, and black inferiority, and how vehement the resistance is to our people being educated properly. We've already got people starting to line up to talk to you, and we definitely want to make sure too that any websites, emails, phone numbers that you need to give out so that people can get involved in this case, we want to make sure we do that as well. But we've got Eric from New Orleans on, and he's got a comment. Let me see if I can get his mic open. Brother Eric?
Yeah, God bless you all. How you doing?
Wonderful. How are you, sir? Welcome to Elevated Places.
Thank you for having your wonderful guests and this excellent subject matter. I've always wondered about Bluefield State and West Virginia State. Did all the blacks leave out of West Virginia, and that's how those two schools became white universities? And you just mentioned how they got rid of the faculty. But what did happen to the black college-age students in West Virginia?
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Okay. And is that same trick being played at Delaware State? And is this only state universities, or just – or does this also include private black HBCUs also?
Well, let me start with the latter part of your question. It's easier to go after the state universities because the state universities are generally controlled by the General Assembly or the state legislators. Now, in 1992, there was a very – and I just finished my second piece of the article. It took me a while because I was really depressed for a while. Having my job taken, raising kids, and I'm on food stamps. And now I just got a letter saying that they were going to take my food stamps. They're trying to destroy me, basically, to shut me up, also because I was investigating lynchings that are still going on in Delaware, and which is another big issue. That's one of the reasons why they came down on me, among others. And the students were having a protest over the lynchings, the flyer that a group of white people put out saying that they were going to lynch one nigger at a time. And they actually lynched somebody at the park where I was going to every day. They lynched my former barber. But in 1992, there was a Supreme Court case called versus the United States. Is it Harris versus United States? I can't remember right now, right offhand. But in this court, the Supreme Court basically said that black colleges were illegal. They violated Brown versus the Board of Education. And not only did they say they violated them, they gave the states unprecedented authority to basically what they call integrate the schools, right, and bring in white students who will go at a free price. They will go for free, and the state and the federal government will pay for it, and to bring in white professors. So this is the federal government that did this, right? And so that's the latter part of your question. The first part of your question with West Virginia State and Bluefield State and Delaware State and many other schools that I've heard about, Tennessee State is under threat, so many of the state schools around the country, it was easier in West Virginia because a lot of the black population did move out, right? But I talked to an 85-year-old 1940 graduate of West Virginia State. And he told me, he said, "Dr. Issa, I went back to West Virginia State for the first time in the 70s. No, he said in the 80s. And he went to a homecoming. And he said it was so strange because he thought it was at a different school. There were no black people there. It was all, the whole stadium was full of white people." And he said, I was so confused, but I didn't understand what happened. Now, a young lady who wrote a story about my arrest did an investigative story, and she stated that there was a bomb that we don't know who put it at the school. This, I think this is West Virginia State, or is it Bluefield? And that bomb, it was a bomb that went off, and that scared a lot of black students from returning. But I think that West Virginia, per se, because of the population, but in the 90s, they had a governor who was the governor during the case is called Fordyce versus the United States. And that's the Supreme Court decision that nobody talks about, that the government, the federal government, said that HBCUs are basically violating federal law, right? And they have gave a mandate. In order to get federal funding, you have to have a certain amount of white college students and white faculty. And they did, at first they said 5%. You have to do like the white colleges have done, 5%. But then later, because the blacks in Mississippi took them to court, it was a case against all of the Mississippi schools. They later gave unprecedented power to all the state legislators to decide. So in the early 2000s, the state of Tennessee said that Tennessee State had to increase its white population by 50% in order to get funding. Of course, the black community rebelled. And so what they began to do is replace many of the activist, conscious black presidents with hand-picked black folk who would do the bidding of what I call the white supremacist agenda, or what I call to complete white cultural hegemony, right? And so that's what we're faced with now, not only in Delaware State, but Alcorn State. The new president there went on ESPN and basically said that Alcorn is no longer a black college. He went on ESPN online and said it. He said it's no longer a black college. We've moved past that. And this is coming from the White House. And this is why this is important. This is an agenda coming from the very top of the federal government.
Wow.
And I think black people have to understand that the black colleges are the backbone. Now, right now, the Supreme Court is hearing a case called Fisher versus the University of Texas, where they are deliberating right now on ending affirmative action at all white colleges. So we have a structured program coming from the federal government to take blacks out of black colleges, and at the same time, they are deliberating on ending black enrollment at white colleges. So what we're looking at in the next 20 years is a total ethnic cleansing of African Americans in higher education. Now, I know many of us say, "Oh, that can't happen under Obama." It is happening. It's happening.
Dr. Issa, what can we do? What can the black community do?
Well, I can tell you what we're doing. What we decided, because so many people heard about my case, we're having a march on December the 15th, which is Dr. King's birthday, in Dover.
January.
All right? And we decided to do this. We just got an endorsement from the King family. And you can go to March on Dover, blogspot.com, and you can read more information. And in this march, we're dealing with, because Vice President Biden is from Delaware.
Right.
And he wants to run for president, right? And he likes to liken himself and his family behind, they try to say that they're like the Kennedys. So we're saying then the Kennedys, you know, they were basically forced to do some things as it regards civil rights. So we have people like Pam Africa. We have an array of people coming from all over the country to march on Dover, and we're going to deal with a plethora of issues. And we want an anti-lynching bill passed. We want a lot of issues. We're going to address a lot of issues. And then on the eve of Dr. King's, on the eve of Trayvon Martin's death, we're going to be at the the White House. I think that's February the 26th. And we're hoping to have 5,000 people there to bring up these issues of black colleges. And we want to have a petition that we're going to send to the president and the vice president saying that we understand that our future in this country is in jeopardy and that our ancestors have fought too hard to get us to this point. And we're not going to go down without a fight without you people knowing that to attack our colleges in the way that we survived in this country, we're not going to allow this to happen without us responding. And so they're doing this because there hasn't been mass response against it. There hasn't been mass response against it because anybody that has stood up to tell the truth about what's going on, what's really going on, they're shutting them down like what they did to me.
All right. Well, thank you, Dan.
Thank you, Brother Eric. We really appreciate your call because it brought out even more extensive and powerful information. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir, Dave. I want to jump in here and kind of lay out as brief as I can some points. One, we are discussing HBCUs, and I want to point out the H, historically black colleges and universities. Even us using that language is always a catch-20 for me that we're historical and we're still existing. One of the things that the brother talked about, we dealt with this in the early 90s, and since he's a part of Elizabeth City, he knows that, well, for one thing, in 1972, North Carolina A&T State University joined the UNC school system, the University of North Carolina school system, and prior to that, the president of the college went down, and Minister Farrakhan talked about this in 1990 when he came to A&T. He used to go down to the state capitol and get the money, and they determined what they would do for the university. But 1972, A&T joined the UNC school system. And it was 11, but there's 10 HBCUs in North Carolina that's under the UNC school system. So even though you may have predominantly black students there, you're part of the UNC school system. And part of what he was talking about was the dissent decree where state-supported schools, they had a certain quota of white students that had to, minority students had to go to black college, and the minorities on the black college were just white. But the minorities on white colleges could be African, Asian, it could be any other thing, so they didn't They didn't have to recruit black students. So students back in that day with the National Black Student Association was fighting the black student government that was formed by black students. What happens is black students, the activists, they graduate. Also, the black universities statewide, they were not having the funding, as the brother said, to keep black professors. So a lot of the white colleges, as you can see now, a lot of our black scholars are on white colleges. They get tenure there. They get
right.
So they're allowed to go to the white college and get paid. So white colleges have no problem you doing that because your theology and your teaching is not liberating to the point that it's causing uprising in the black folks. So they don't mind you talking black studies all day long and black studies department. So when we see this process, it just didn't start. And when you learn about takeovers are planned years and years in advance. So when Minister Farrakhan has been on his black college tour, one of the things he talked about is that white people are buying up the land around the black colleges and eventually just going to take over the university. In North Carolina and Greensboro, UNCG and North Carolina A&T are one white college, one black college. They're now trying to merge colleges, and they always say, they're not going to merge. But when the white college liberal arts is going up, the black college is going down, but our engineering is up. So it's new need to have a liberal arts and engineering that's just merged the two universities. And they now have a nanotechnology department, a joint thing that they've built, and they're starting to merge that. And the last point is, so you're seeing all this merger and he's closing down the black colleges and the private ones are closing down because we do not support them. So we don't have the endowments as white colleges to keep our black colleges funded when they're private. So we see them going down and we only come in to try to help rescue them at the last minute. And the last thing for closing down black colleges is if you can't close them down, then you make sure there are no men coming out of the black colleges.
Right.
And it's a serious and very, very strong And I've seen this on all the colleges I've traveled throughout this summer on my Respect My Vote campaign. The feminism, the homosexuality outbreak, it's almost like a quote-unquote disease in a sense. And I
epidemic.
Say that not to be disrespectful for the outbreak, because there's so many gay men that are in leadership or over organizations running things in the black colleges. It is rampant. And even the insurgent or the growth of black. So the rough ones are the women, the gay women. Those are the rough ones. And the sweet ones or the soft ones are the men. So they are even doing reverse roles psychologically on black colleges. And you don't see this overgrowth or outbreak of that on predominantly white colleges, as you see percentages on ours.
Yes, sir.
So, Lincoln, the one thing I want to say about those professors, the black professors, we didn't leave because there was more money on the white campuses. We had to leave because they would not give us tenure on the black campuses. We had to leave. That's what happened. It wasn't that black teachers left because there was more money at the white campuses. We were forced to leave, not getting tenure, and then the white campuses called me up, offered me a job at Rutgers once they got rid of me at North Carolina A&T. So don't put it on the teachers. It actually was a system. And to add to what Brother Terrence said, before 1972, the president of North Carolina A&T was chosen by the alumni. But when it became part of the university system, the chancellor, not president, is chosen by the president of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. So we completely lost the ability to determine who was going to be our leader on our campus at North Carolina A&T.
Well, since we're talking about North Carolina, this is where North Carolina plays a big role in the, and you're absolutely right, both of you. One, the minister talking about the land that's being bought up. The land is being bought up essentially because it seems, like I said earlier, Fordyce versus the United States. We have to study that case, right? And it's stated, the Supreme Court said that these schools have to whiten up. In fact, just Supreme Court Justice White went further and said, you black folk are crazy if you think we're going to continue to finance in this country black private choice to go to black enclaves. He said, that's over with, right? So we got to really look at that. So with that, the corporations came in around the 90s. George Bush Sr., in his executive order to the HBCUs, enclosed in his executive order a program for the corporations to come in. So they had already predicted, you're right, that they had decided this a long time ago, but they didn't have the legal backing to do it, right? And so with them buying up the land, they are predicting in 10 to 15 years there won't be no black people there. And once the white students come in, the value goes up, right? So with the state of North Carolina, this is how sinister North Carolina is. Under the direction of the former North Carolina chancellor for all the universities. A lot of people don't know who that is, but I'm going to tell you. His name is Erskine Bowles. So who is Erskine Bowles? Why is he important today? Well, Erskine Bowles, for 7 years, he was in the Clinton administration in the White House. And then once Clinton left, he went to North Carolina and became the chancellor for the North Carolina school system. And under his 8 years, he replaced all of the black presidents who had a commitment to the black community with presidents who didn't, right? And I can name the presidents. And so Erskine Bowles is now in the Obama administration. And the president of Dell State is a student of Erskine Bowles. So that's why they were able to get the president of Dell State to come there and turn the school over to the white legislator, which he's done, right? But Erskine Bowles is probably going to be the next treasurer, secretary of treasury for the United States. But he handpicked and trained a whole generation of future leaders to run HBCUs. And many of his people are at HBCUs all over the country, and they're very much anti-commitment to the black community.
Yes,
now, we can reverse these issues because the Supreme Court in Fordyce versus the United States, they one of the justices in 2003 even admitted, he said, we're probably going to be challenged on Fordyce, and there's plenty of room to challenge Fordyce. But black people really haven't caught up to what Fordyce is doing. So that's why when Minister Farrakhan says that they're buying property all over the black colleges, they're doing it because they are anticipating that in 15 to 20 years, most of the state colleges will not be black.
Right,
they will not
exactly.
be black. Now, there's another organization that's leading this effort. It's called the College Board. Your listeners should Google the College Board. They're out of New York. That's the group that is responsible for the SAT and other college admission tests. But they also, they are the group that is basically handling all of the HBCUs out of Mississippi and Alabama. And they get to hand pick the presidents. And these are all powerful white folk. And the former president of the College Board was the two-time governor of West Virginia when two of the HBCUs in West Virginia turned all white. He went straight from there to the College Board. They got a lot of money to facilitate the Fordyce decision in Mississippi and Alabama and to force those schools into turning white. And they have a lot of power and influence.
Yes, sir. Well, we've got a lot of callers waiting to get more of this information. This is very, very critical to our progress as a people that we understand thoroughly what is happening to us. We've got Brother Lewis on the line. He's got a question, and I want to, of course, always welcome Brother Lewis to Elevated Places.
Assalamualaikum, family. How y'all doing?
Yeah, good. How are you, beloved?
Doing real good. We're real excited about you coming on the Southbound Lane Show Sunday.
Oh, yes, sir. I'm looking forward to it.
And I tell you, the lecture that you did on Sunday was just phenomenal. We just thoroughly enjoyed it, and thank God so much for you pushing this very important underground railroad of information.
Yes, sir.
You know, the black intellectuals are in a crisis. Most of them throughout the country, but there's a resurgence of serious activists who are also intellectuals coming forward. And we really love what you and Dr. Ridgely and Brother Terrence and Dr. Issa are doing. I had a couple of quick questions. One, I don't know if you've seen it or not, but the mayor of Mississippi is coming out now admitting that his father, which we've been saying for some time now, that the Klan had a black hit team in Mississippi, and some of these hit men actually participated in the murder of civil rights icons. Also, I wanted to see if Dr. Issa could speak to the point that there were many black colleges already set up before the historical black colleges, such as like Leland College in Louisiana, that had a focus on self-independence and self-reliance, and they were actually destroyed by the historical black colleges. And then I wanted to see if he could speak a little bit about the role Joe Biden's son has played and the lynchings that are going on and covering them up in Delaware. And thank you, Dr. Issa, and thank y'all, and I'll tune in and be listening.
Thank
well,
you.
Well, I've got to answer real quick. I'll start with the second question. Yes. There were a plethora of black colleges that were – see, the whole black – if you read my article, I give a brief history of the evolution of the black colleges. It's not as many people think that all the black colleges were all created by white people. No. Right out of enslavement, our people did this.
Yeah.
When the white missionaries came into the South, and they thought that they were coming to civilize backward Africans, they were surprised when they got there that the Africans coming straight out of slavery, the first thing we said is that we want an education.
That's right.
Right? And we
That's
set
right.
up our own schools. So
right.
when they came in, by 1877, there were more than 500 independent black schools with black curriculums, with black teachers, independent of white people. And so when they came in, they were shocked. If we look at schools like Lincoln University in Missouri, that was set up by our people,
yes,
by
sir.
Black men who served in the Civil War. And they set that school up themselves. No white people did this for them. So this is what happened. Whites, after Reconstruction, realized that they had a problem. All right, they took the South back. We call it redemption, historically. And they said, how do we get these Negroes back to working? They don't want to work because all of their schools are teaching them about what? Self-reliance. They say, okay, we need to start training people who are going to train black people to be mired in the plantation cotton-picking economy. And so what they set out was to start these industrial schools. And the first person they picked as a leader after they trained him to run this program, he was hand-picked, was none other than Booker T. Washington. People forget that Booker T. Washington's entrance into Hampton had nothing to do with the academic. You want to know what his entrance exam was? Sweeping the floor. Because the purpose of these industrial schools were to replace any type of self-reliant black people into people that would serve the interests of white people, of the white industrialists who were coming down south to take advantage of the rebuilding of the South. And they needed that cheap labor. And so Booker T. Washington's job, and he got so much money for doing it, is to keep black people mired in the Southern economy that was basically benefited the white supremacists. Right? Now, this is not to say that Booker T. Washington was all of a bad person, because he did a lot of great things, but we have to remember his primary, his purpose. Now, going to the other part of the question with the lynchings in Delaware, yes, we believe that there have been, that we know of, we believe that there have been, in the last 2 years, two lynchings and one attempted lynching. There was a young man named Charles Conley. You can go on War on the Horizon, look under on the war room, and you'll see his story. He was found hanging from a tree at Wesley College, which is a predominantly, well, it's a mixture of blacks and whites, right in Dover. It's about less than a mile from Delaware State University. Now, in early February, some people in the community heard that I was about to start a newspaper. And so they came to me with a flyer, and they said, you're an activist professor. We want you to do something. And the flyer depicted a black man hanging from a tree, and it said, cleaning our streets one nigga at a time. When I first saw the flyer, I was like, yeah, right, this is a joke. This isn't happening. You know, but I wanted to investigate it. I went into the community, and I found that somebody had distributed hundreds of these flyers throughout the black community in Dover. Dover is about 40% black. And so Dover is the capital of Delaware. And so I went door-to-door and asked people, you know, did this really happen? And they began to tell me. They also told me that the police went door-to-door and asked the people to give the flyers up. And the black folks said they weren't giving their flyers up. And so in February, I wanted to incorporate that flyer into my African-American history course when I got to the origins of the Civil Rights Movement dealing with Emmett Till. And the day that I gave a lecture on lynchings, the students, these are 18-year-old, predominantly about 95% black students, they saw the flyer, and to my dismay, they became very interested because they couldn't believe that this was going on. Many of these kids are coming from New York. They're coming from black communities in Maryland and Jersey. And they just couldn't believe. They took pictures of the flyer. The next day, they had a rally saying they wanted the state to find out who put these flyers out, because they go into the black community shopping, and they didn't want to end up being found on a tree. At this time, I did not know that a young man, a black man who was 19 years old, who had been at this college for less than 7 weeks was found hanging on the tree. The state ruled it, the Dover police ruled it a suicide, right? So the students had this rally, and the president of Dell State shut them down. And that was the next day they decided to do that, that they were going to have a major protest to talk about the lack of black professors and other issues, including the flyers and money that was missing through an audit of the state that indicted the president of Dell State. And that's when they decided to arrest me, set me up, and arrest me and charge me. Then we found out in May, maybe 11th, 2012, my former barber, we didn't have a personal relationship, but it was a young man that I didn't know in the community. He cut my hair a few times at a shop. We found out at the park that I was going to after I was forced under threat to sign documents saying that when I was in the police department, in jail, saying that I would not come back up to Dell State. 2 months later, my former barber is found hanging from a tree with a belt at the park where I was going 5 times a week with my family and children, right? And that, too, was ruled a suicide. And this was a Muslim. He was a Muslim African-American male. And that story is also on War on the Horizon. And then... an activist lady who we were trying to investigate these other two lynchings, we found out that they tried to, a group of guys abducted her godson who was staying with her at the time and said that they were going to and tried to lynch him. And when they tried to cut off his penis, he was basically unconscious. They put him in a car at gunpoint, pistol whipped him, and then, according to his testimony to the Dover Human Relations Commission, and they took him to the same park where the other guy was found hanging from a belt on an oak tree. They took him there, and when they tried to cut off his penis, they first tried to cut off his ear, and you can see all the pictures on the website. Then they tried to cut off his penis. He started fighting for his life, and he started screaming. It was around 6 in the morning. He ends up in the backyard of a white family's house. They saw him bleeding. They called the police and the ambulance. They took him to the hospital, and they said that he was a drug dealer, and it was a bad drug deal that went bad. But he testified that it was not a drug deal that went bad, and that the guys who tried to lynch him, they put a belt around his neck. They tried to lynch him. They admitted to him that he was going to die, because it was his time to die, and that they admitted that they also killed the other guy in May at the park. And since then, we have got no help from the Attorney General. They turned a deaf ear to us. We went to City Council. We went to the state-controlled Delaware Commission on Human Relations. We testified there. We testified everywhere. We even called Eric Holder's office. We called the Attorney General, one of the subdivisions of the Attorney General's office. We got in contact with them, but they stayed apart of us. There's an election here. We're not dealing with this until after the election. After the election, we heard nothing from them, and it's just been a cover-up. It's been a cover-up. So that's why we have people coming into Dover on the 15th. On Dr. King's birthday to talk about this, and we're saying that we want an anti-lynching bill passed because there's never been a lynching bill. When that story appeared on War on the Horizon, and we called War on the Horizon because nobody else, none of the other media would touch this story. I went to Brother Askia Muhammad. He said he wouldn't touch it. I called up Abdul Muhammad. Nothing was done. I found out once the story hit War on the Horizon, several black mothers started calling me, telling me that their sons were lynched all over the country, right? And now we're seeing that that there are a lot of lynchings going on, but the game is ruling them as suicides. So all of a sudden, black men are hanging themselves on oak trees. They're killing themselves. So what I said, if that's the case, then we need to call in the CDC. And we need to find out why black men are hanging themselves on a tree so that we can stop, we can prevent that. But we don't think that's what's going on. We think that black men are being lynched all over the country. They're being ruled as suicides. That way they don't have to do anything about it. And the vice president's son, Mr. Bo Biden, who's prosecuting me, by the way, he's the person that's prosecuting me. He is covering this up with the help of his father, we believe so.
Wow.
I'm sorry I get so passionate about this because it's just really had a tremendous impact on me. You know, just going through this and seeing this with my own eyes. And the only reason why they haven't done anything to me, because there were threats on the streets that they were going to come after and do something to me, possibly kill me, is because of the credibility. And when I brought the credibility that I have for having a PhD and a professor, and when we brought War on the Horizon out and they did that video of me, I think that's what probably saved my life because we put it out to the community. But we're still investigating it. We still want the Attorney General, the Vice President's son, to do a full investigation, and we want these things to stop. But they're not going to stop until black people demand this. But we think it's happening all over the country. I've heard about Lincoln, Maryland, and California. One lady, her son was lynched. I'm sorry?
I'm just bearing witness, brother. Sorry, I didn't know I was still on. Louisiana, definitely.
Louisiana, Mississippi, they're going on. They are lynching us. They've never stopped lynching us. And you would think in 2012. So in 2005, the Senate passed, it wasn't a bill, it was a resolution saying that they apologized for the more than 5,000 lynchings that occurred in this country from the end of Reconstruction up until the 1950s. 5,000 lynchings, y'all. This is that were recorded. This is incomprehensible. But yet, to this day, more than 100 years ago, Du Bois and the NAACP had a march for anti-lynching. And to this day, here we are in 2012 with a black man sitting in the White House, and we're still talking about lynchings. And they want us to believe that these black people are all of a sudden hanging themselves on trees. Any black man with any doggone sense would know that that is not true. But in Delaware, they're so used to lynching black people, they put out a flyer in the community, says that they were going to lynch people, and did it.
Yes, sir. Well, you know, all of this leads to the Honorable Elijah Muhammad's statement to us. Number one, he said Allah will make you separate. Number two, he said that separation is the best and only solution. So with our black president, with our black professors, with our black physicians, black politicians, black entertainers, I don't care what happens, the essential doctrine of white supremacy and black inferiority that this country is built on is never going to change. And we actually stand on the precipice of another war between the states, or I can't understand the term civil war. But no, lynching has never ceased. It has never ceased, and it never will, because there is lust in the mind of the Caucasian male for the torture and death of the black man. It is not going to end. As long, Minister Farrakhan has said, as long as we live with white people, we will live under them. But Dr. Issa, we got a lot of people lined up that want to talk to you and deal with this truth that you are bringing. Sister Carol has been on for quite some time waiting to talk to you. Assalamu alaikum, Sister Carol.
Alaikum salam.
Thank
Sister
you so
Carol.
Much for calling in, Sister. You can
and
go right ahead.
Thank you for this profound panel that you have. I would like to make a comment that I have children at Bethune-Cookman College, and each time I ask them about their professors are Russian.
Mm-hmm.
And they, you know, they've been there for 3 years now, And I just have been trying to get the student government to invite the minister, and Brother Ishmael has been there. And it's just that they haven't invited him. But Bethune-Cookman College was started by Mary McLeod Bethune,
yes,
a black woman. And it's just many of their professors are white.
Yes, ma'am.
And this is a topic that no one but this blog talk has covered. Thank you so much, Sister Ava, for
Thank
Elevated
you.
Places. Thank you for your guests. Thank you for Brother Terrence. Thank you, Dr. Ridgely, for your articles in the Final Call newspaper, the one on homosexuality. I have let my sons read it, and it is profound. Thank you for this topic, and thank you, Sister Ava, for Sunday. The history lesson you gave us was profound. I did not know that about the Honorable Elijah Muhammad's mother when she carried him. Thank you so much for this topic. And if the brother could please give information of again of what
yes.
we could do to help him,
yes.
I would like information. And where can we go to read his articles?
Excellent. Excellent. If we can get Dr. Issa. Thank you, Sister Carol.
Yes,
you're
the
welcome.
Article found. Just Google how black colleges are turning white, and there have been several websites that have republished the article. The original article appeared on the Black Agenda Report, but 3 days after it came on in September, someone hacked into the Black Agenda Report. They had never been hacked into before, and shut it down for more than a week and attacked my article specifically. Right?
Yes,
and so, but it's back up. You can just Google how black colleges are turning white. Also, if you want to help me, I set up an organization. It's called the HBCU Institute. That's HBCUinstitute.org. Now, that institute is designed to be a non-compromising organization to lobby for black colleges. And we were trying to have a major, we were going to have a major summit right before I got arrested. We were organizing a major summit on the future of black colleges right before I got arrested. But on there is a link to my legal defense fund. Like I said, I'm out of work. I'm on food stamps now, and I have 5 children under the age of 14. And it's very difficult for us. And although on December the 4th were the officers who arrested me at the university, one black, one white, admitted that they had no probable cause, the judge just abruptly ended our hearing, on to suppression and entrapment and didn't give us a time to come back. It's been 1 month. We haven't even heard from the judge. When they admitted that they had no reason to even arrest me, the officers also admitted that they offensively touched me before I allegedly touched them. And we haven't heard anything from the judge. And my lawyer, who's a very competent attorney, wrote a dynamic memorandum to suppress 10 pages. He wrote it in the style of Thurgood Marshall and Charles Hamilton Houston and Johnny Cochran. The court has yet to respond to it. This is Bo Biden. This is Bo Biden.
Yes.
This is the son of the vice president. So people need to understand what we are in for.
Right.
And they know with me saying that I bring credibility to it.
That's right.
We are in trouble. And I'm not saying that we haven't been in trouble, but we're all into this. And I understand why, you know, because the Obamas, they look good up there, you know. But we're losing some of the central issues that our people have historically dealt with. And we're losing that. We're losing it. So if you want to see the article, just Google how black colleges are turning white, or go to Black Agenda Report and put in my name, Jahi Issa, J-A-H-I. Last name ISSA, and if you want to send any type of donation for my legal defense fund, it's HBCUinstitute.org. If it's $5, we will accept it. We're on me and my family. We were suffering, you know, for me.
Yes, sir.
Not the way I did. We're suffering. Also, Sister Ava, one thing that I would love for you to do for me, I talked to Sister Nisi, who writes for, I think her name is Nisi Muhammad. She writes for the Final Call. She was supposed to cover my story and also my article on how black colleges are turning white. I think if we can get these stories in the paper, the only consistent black paper we have in black America, the Final Call, I think that would be a game changer.
Is it Nisa Islam or Nisa?
Nisa. I think it's Nisa.
Okay. Yes, sir.
And
yes, sir.
Right.
But absolutely.
The only viable organization we have that's been committed to black people is the Nation of Islam. That's all
that's
we
exactly
have.
That's exactly right. I'm sorry.
No, that's it. That's it.
Okay. Because I got a lot of people that still want to come on, and we are running out of time. Let's get to Brother Kevin. He's got a comment. Brother Kevin, are you still with us?
Assalamu alaikum. Yes, I'm here, sister. How
well,
you doing?
Alaikum salam, sir. Fine, sir.
All right. I just want to thank you once again for always bringing the heat with these shows. I'd like to thank Dr. Issa for taking the time to come out and try to give our people this information. And once again, to the panelists on here, Dr. Ridgely, and all of you, assalamu alaikum. I just want to make a few comments. Dr. Ridgely, this is Kevin down here in Georgia with the Hot Black Coffee Party. Yes, sir. And I just want to, say once again, Dr. Ava, we look forward to possibly hearing you this Sunday on the Southbound Lane. And I hope you bring the fire that you brought this past Sunday. Very inspirational. The comment that I had initially was already, you already took that one by the horns and expressed the fact of separation. And that's what we're here for. We have to realize that we have to get from up underneath these devils and do it yourself. I mean, who will we complain to? I mean, we're complaining because they don't want to play fair. They can't play fair. That's their nature. That's who they are, and we have to realize who we are and do for self. That's mainly the thing that I wanted to say.
Yes. Well, that's a critical thing to say, and we just have to face. It's a difficult thing to face, but we have no choice.
It is. I mean, and the whole thing is really about self and offense. We have to stop straddling, jump the fence, and go just leave these people alone. We're making progress. We're making strides. Whenever we're on the phone, we're trying to build, bring all of our talents together so that we can showcase them and so that we can make this dream a reality. It's our destiny to happen. It's just that we have to go ahead and leave everything behind, just as the children of Israel in the Bible did, and move into that land without, any worries, fears, or, thoughts of going back.
That's right. Thank you so much, Brother Kevin. I want to get to Sister Brenda, and then I'll come back to the panel, because she's been on for more than a half an hour, so I want to make sure we don't lose her, get to the end before letting her speak. Sister Brenda?
Yes, ma'am. I thought
Wa alaikum salam.
I wanted to make a comment regarding, I listened to the brother talking about the lessons that's going on that's really not getting any news coverage. But it sounds like to me that we're under a constant attack. But I wanted to say something regarding what I'm observing. In our community, there's a high desire from certain groups to partnership, for guidance on leadership and also for protection of our children. I just want to know, what are we going to do as a people? Because I'm seeing every day and I'm hearing every day things that's going on, that's happening to us. We are to remain sitting ducks. I don't know. I just feel like it's time for us to fight back in some way. I know we don't have the weaponry. I know that. But, you know, I think there should be meetings, you know, whether it's private or open, on how do we combat this thing that's going on with us.
Well, I will say this and then go back to the panel and to Dr. Issa, but if you will please be so kind, and I say this over and over, I am not a cult follower, but I'm going to tell you, you have one person at the end of the day who's bringing us the solution to this. Now, everything, we need to fight battles. We need to fight back. I'm an attorney. You know, I believe fighting in the court system has its place. But at the end of the day, again, we don't have any business with these people. We were kidnapped. We were abducted. We were forced here. There's no natural relationship between us and white people. 400 years of trying every possible approach, every one of which has failed miserably, should tell us we're wasting our time. Weaponry we don't need, okay? We have to the same. We didn't have weaponry in slavery. We didn't have weaponry in Jim Crow, and we came through it with faith in God. And the key, the only thing we're missing right now is unity. That's the singular thing that we're missing. The presence, Allah let us see that the achievement of the Oval Office was not going to get it done. We've been in the Senate, we've been in the Congress, we sit on the U.S. Supreme Court. There is nowhere we haven't been. The only thing we haven't done is demand a separate state or territory of our own. That's all. I mean, that's just all I have to add to the conversation.
Somebody, can I add something to that?
Certainly.
You know, Donald Elijah Muhammad and his economic blueprint, you know, he starts off that we should pool our resources, both physically and financially. Now, physically, that means that you got to pool your resources. That means you individually, either you're going to live close together or you're going to move to another area where you can live close together. Even in our cities, our conscious people do not live close to one another, so we all sitting ducks because we're around people who are not looking out for our well-being. We need to move to a particular location in a city, outside of a city, on another farm, but whatever. But the issue is, only way you can protect yourself is to move close together with those who have the same mindset. There's no other way. There's no mystery God.
That's exactly right. And go ahead, yes, sir.
Yeah, I just wanted to jump in. I wanted to go back to a couple of points. Sister Carol, I'll let her know. One, I think people need to remember to get the book Without Sanctuary. You can go to store.finalcall.com Without Sanctuary to see some of the pictures that you showed on your lecture this past Sunday. You can go back to noi.org/webcast to see the lecture again. But we need to remember the historical context as we watch this movie, Jenga. And everybody's talking about it, but they can go get Without Sanctuary and really see the actual lynchings of real people, not movies, of real people that was lynched in their stories. Also, get the historical account when we know Weinstein that made the movie, but there was no outward Jewish involvement of the slave trade. But get the book Secret Relationships Between Blacks and Jews. And get that, and to learn more about the messenger's history, just come to the Founders Day at the farm, at Muhammad's farm, in July to get more of that. And that last piece I would add to our brother guest tonight is that also on your website to start to reach out to students and to organize them to help be a power on the college campus to help fight back against this, because once the students start to uprise and start to protest, then that brings more attention, because a lot of the professors are removed and secretly displaced, and students don't even know what happened. They're banned from the universities and they're not allowed to come back. But if the students are in support, then it's harder, not saying that they can't, but it's harder for them to do that. And that's why the Minister Farrakhan is coming to these college campuses to raise again, the consciousness of these students, because that's one of the things they have done is had a concerted effort to take the professors off the college. And not just professors, but any level of consciousness that will come on. They stop black, I mean, they stop for the minister bring coming on college campuses, and then they stop any conscious brothers and sisters coming on those college campuses. So as you're starting to do whatever you're doing, make sure that you include the students so they can understand that struggle and that they can be a part of helping whatever your efforts are in this movement.
That's right. Okay, we've got Dr. Salam holding. Assalamu alaikum, Dr. Salam. Welcome to Elevated Places.
Thank you, Dr. Ava Muhammad. Wa alaikum salam. Assalamu alaikum to your guests, Dr. Issa, Dr. Risley, Strong Soldier, Brother Terrence, and, of course, Queen LaDonna. This is just really, really, really powerful. The brother said he got fired from his position and removed, so he must have been doing something conscious that would uplift our people to be fired. But Sister Rhonda Lee with KTBS, I'm sure you all know about her, who she was fired for cutting her hair to an afro.
Right.
This is a woman who looks closer to them. But the afro is a culture that's not of them. So it's a move to dehumanize black life that is the whole essence of this takeover. And these people are really serious. I still go back to what Bob Schieffer said, where are the old white men? We're in trouble. But there's only one answer, and there's only one man in our time that has given us the answer, and that is the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad. Everything else is an aim, but without a purpose. What Muslims believe, the first part of number 9, I'll say this and I'll hang up. The first half of this says, we believe that the offer of integration is hypocritical and is made by those who are trying to deceive the black peoples into believing that their 400-year-old open enemies of freedom, justice, and equality are all of a sudden their friends. Furthermore, we believe that such deception is intended to prevent black people from realizing that the time in history has arrived for the separation from the whites of this nation. I'm not going to say anything else behind that, because anything I say behind that would be simply poison. I'll just leave you in the freedom to peace. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam, sir. And interestingly enough, Brother Bobby Muhammad, our researcher, sent that same number 9 from what the Muslims want, and I had it posted up here on the wall to say, and Dr. Salam read it beautifully, and it is self-evident. So, Dr. Issa, I want to commit to you over the air that I'm going to speak with Sister Nisa and others and make sure we pursue this situation so that we and you know, we definitely will cover this in the final call newspaper. I don't know what happened to the story, but you know, it's certainly not fear that's keeping it. That has kept it out, because yes, sir. So we must have had some sort of slip up, because this is exactly what we exist to bring to the people. As you have so courageously brought to the forefront, and the more you speak, the more I understand why they got rid of you, because you're using your brilliance to bring truth, and you bring it in a way that's so clear and understandable to our people. And nobody in the power structure, white or the Samuel Jackson composite character, you have so many of those in the government and in the private sector, that of course they're going to shut you down. They do not want your voice heard. But I love what Brother Terrence is saying. The key is going to be the students themselves, and if we study the history of revolutions, at least even in the past 5,000 year history cycle, that's where revolutions start. Is in among college students who are receiving an education. It's always the educated class that leads the revolution. The poor are too busy trying to survive.
Well,
and make it from day to day.
Well, as it regards me, when they arrested me on campus, they did it in front of 200 students. It was
yes,
a lengthy. And if you look at the video that's on Wall and Horizon of them arresting me, you will hear the students saying, "That's our favorite professor. Let him go. Look at what you've done to him. Stop it. He's been with us. He's fighting for us." So they did that intentionally to disperse the students. So the students were there. I was with the students.
Yes, sir.
They were going to walk over to the Board of Trustee meeting to talk about these issues. But they didn't want these black students doing it, although they allowed the white students to do it a year prior.
Yes.
But they didn't want black students at a black college going and talking about issues pertaining to black people. The students. But what they did is scared off the students by arresting me. And any child who's looking at that and they say, "Damn, they're doing this to a professor?"
Right. Right.
So the issue was everybody else who saw the video, they witnessed me go down like that. But there hasn't been any outrage.
Well, that's why we've got to get the story, as you're asking us to do. We've got to get it out because the minister has fought back against his exclusion from these campuses, and it has taken not only his courage but the courage of students on these campuses to get him there. And so it's not just the responsibility of the students in Delaware, it's the responsibility of all of us, but including black students at other schools around the nation. I think that's where you're coming from, Brother Terrence, is more of a national movement. And then, you know, you have like brothers like Brother Jesse with his blog,
right.
And we have the social network outlets. And frankly, you know, what's coming to surface now, the Romney campaign underestimated. That's how they underestimated Barack Obama's ability to attain re-election is really among the youth, and through the internet. And so all of the billions of dollars that were poured into the Romney campaign ended up being for naught. And so that continues to be a true strategy today. So we've just got to make sure we get this in the final call and also utilize our networks with the youth to get this story out.
Let me give a little bit of history as to why they're taking down the black colleges. You talked about the students and the movement. Okay, you know, back in the 60s, the civil rights movement really got caught on fire when the students at North Carolina A&T started the sit-ins in January 31st of 1960, Greensboro 4.
Yeah.
And right after that, there was a string of sit-ins all across the country by college students, which developed into, by the end of the year, the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, or SNCC. Okay.
Right.
So, and then in A&T in 1969, that was a war. I mean, it was the National Guard was shooting at the students, and the students were shooting at the National Guard, and they had to fly in the airborne in the North Carolina A&T's campus because of the uprising. So this is the reasons why they have closing down these black college campuses and getting rid of those professors, because the movement actually developed on those campuses, and it was the campus in connection with the farmers. The farmers used their land as the to bail out the students when they were put in jail. So they come at the black farmers, and they're coming at the black colleges to remove the base that started the problem for the white folks.
Well, I'm glad you gave that. And you know, I talked Sunday about James Meredith, you know, and his courage and strength in integrating University of Mississippi in 62. And it that really brought about within the state of Mississippi another war. In fact, that's what the governor called it. He said it was the biggest crisis since the war between the states. The idea of this one black man thinking he was going to attend Ole Miss. But to the point that Brother Terrence is raising, it's always the youth, the young people in their teens and 20s that bring about this. And of course, it was when James Meredith was shot when he did his singular march from Memphis to Jackson. That's when Kwame Ture, then Stokely Carmichael, came to Memphis, as did Dr. King, who Dr. King was 26 years old.
That's right.
You know, at the time that he got involved. You know, Minister Farrakhan in his early 20s when he came into the nation. Malcolm. You know, it's not people 50 years old, you know,
come on.
You know, that initiate these battles and fight these battles. It's the young whose future is at stake. You get these professors, they're getting these paychecks, they got mortgage notes. As the sister that was on a few weeks ago, Sister Norma Hollis, talked about, you know, they get you burdened with debt.
Yes.
And once you do find strong brothers like Dr. Issa that the students relate to, they instantly target you.
That's
right. And so we've got to make sure we close that gap between us and the youth. As Cicely Tyson said, in Africa, they didn't have a generation gap. The generation gap is something manufactured by white people.
That's
you
right.
You know, this breach between young and old. That's part of pooling resources, is the youth and who are for war, and the elder for counsel. We don't do that anymore. And we've got Minister Farrakhan is bringing that back. He's restoring that bond, because this is a man that will be 80 years old in a few months, but yet 17- and 18-year-olds pour out to hear him.
That's right.
That's right.
No. So,
well,
Muhammad,
one of the things that we've talked about in Delaware is bringing the minister to Delaware State. I think there are some groups that would love to have him for February, Black History Month. We tried to set that up right before I was arrested, of course, but I know some people who will be interested in sponsoring the minister to come and talk about it. And I think if people can put my article out there for the minister to see, it can really help in his pursuit to try to save black colleges. Yes, we would love to have the minister to come to Delaware. We will organize around that. And I think it's timely if he does decide to come.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes, sir. Well, Dr. Issa, we can't thank you enough. And one more time, give us the website where those that wish to make donations, those that wish to find out more about what they can do, can reach you.
Yes. One, we're having a march in Dover. We have people coming from all over the country. Sister Pam Africa is going to be one of the keynote speakers. You can go to March on Dover blogspot.com, and you will see that the King family, Sister Alveda King, has endorsed the march. It's on Dr. King's website, and you can comment and leave a message there. If you want to reach me personally, you can go to my website at hbcuinstitute.org, and you can even make a donation to my legal defense fund to help me continue my fight against the powerful Biden family, which, you know, I can't win without the support of the people.
Right.
And you can email me personally at jahiissa65@gmail.com. And thank you for having me on your show and all of your wonderful guests, intelligent guests. And hopefully we can get these stories out. The lynchings, I know the final call did a story a while ago on a brother that was lynched in Mississippi. But we have two right here in Delaware, and two in one attempted. That's what makes it powerful. One guy got away, and he can tell his story.
He lived to tell it. Well, we've got to get off the air, but we're going to pursue this, Dr. Issa. Thank you, and thank you to the Elevated Places team, and may Allah bless all of us with love, light, and success. Thank you all so much. As-salamu alaykum.
Alaykum as-salam.